welcome along to the Property Academy podcast. I'm your host, Emma Knight.
I'm Andrew Nicholl.
And today on the show, it is episode 666. What does that mean? The devil is in the detail. Now, you can't see this if you're listening to the show, but you folks watching on YouTube, you'll be able to see this. We've got our best devil horns and my little angel halo on because we are digging into the detail today. And it is a day in the life of the devil himself, Andrew Nicholl. And so what we're going to be talking about today when we're thinking about this devil is in the detail is what is it like, a day in the life of Andrew, dealing with developers and some of the stuff, some of the detailed stuff that goes on. And I think that the key message coming out from this is going to be that although new builds can be attractive under this new legislative environment, under the new tax rules that are coming out, it's not all hunky-dory just because you think you're going to sign the contract, get a new place, sweet, all good. There is some stuff that goes on. And so, Andrew, I just want to hear about what goes on a day in the life of you working with developers all day long.
Yeah, there's a reason I have a regular subscription for Botox, let's just say that. It's quite interesting timing that we're having this conversation because I had dinner with a good friend of mine, Matt Horncastle, who's the owner of Williams Corporation last night, and he and I were talking about the fact that there are so many new developers springing up at the moment. Like it is starting to feel like a world before the GFC where you get new developers on the block who haven't experienced some of the challenges with development that an experienced developer might know about. Now, I'm not saying just use experienced developers like Mike Greer that have been around for years. There's plenty of good new developers who maybe have experience in other kind of things, but it's just something to be aware of because even some kind of semi-experienced developers, some friends of mine, were having some issues with getting a clear code of compliance and clear title for settlement. And it was so no fault of theirs, it was a problem with the council. But of course, that then leads to a delayed settlement, which leads to unhappy tenants. And so you've got to work through these things. Development's not for the faint-hearted. And buying off the plans is not for the faint-hearted as well, especially if you're going in alone because you're one person who, if you have an issue, you might not necessarily have the same kind of grunt as maybe a group like ours. So let's just talk a little bit about some of the things that I see. And it's probably a good week to be talking about this because last week was probably one of the more hellish weeks in terms of dealing with developments gone bad and issues that have happened. And I'll talk about some of the things that I've seen or I deal with and some of the things I've seen in the market as well that I haven't touched and then have ended up really bad for people. So, good example, one of the developers that I deal with on a regular basis, and this is a guy that I wholeheartedly recommend as a sound developer to invest with. He came to me and he said, "We've got a problem. The prices that we've sold for are about 10% under what they ought to have been." And he produced this valuation, which had been supplied to us, and somewhere in the process, the numbers had got mixed up and we'd recommended 16 properties to investors at a price that was significantly lower than what they were valued at. Great for the investors, terrible for him because he was going to go broke.
And just to confirm as well, these investors had signed the sale and purchase agreement, which had been countersigned by the developer.
Oh, not only that, they'd gone unconditional and paid deposits. You could think to yourself, if I've got a sale and purchase to buy a property, I've paid a deposit to a developer, then they have to build that property at that price and deliver it within the next 12 months or 24 months. And if they don't, then the sunset clause kicks in. Well, let's face it, if financially it's not going to work and you don't let the developer let you out of that contract or you don't let him out of that contract, then nothing's going to happen. And the money's just going to sit in a lawyer's trust account. And then when finally that sunset clause ends, then you'll get your deposit back because it hasn't gone anywhere and you might have got a little bit of interest, 1% from the developer's lawyer's trust account, but that's it. And so there's a major opportunity cost there. So whilst you can dig your heels in, it's actually not going to get any kind of result.
So what you're suggesting in that case is that even though these investors were in the right, they've got to work with the developer because otherwise the property's not going to get built.
Absolutely. And actually, this goes a step further. So this was subject to resource consent and final confirmation of the developer buying the land. Now, if the developer's not happy with the resource consent or doesn't confirm the purchase to buy the land, then he'll just cancel the contract anyway. And where basically last Friday was the day that it had to happen by.
Ah, so hence why he was finally looking up on it.
Absolutely. Now, this was probably 20 hours of my week last week and several sleep hours that were lost.
So only a quarter of your week.
Yeah, absolutely. And so it was quite a challenging thing because I had to basically massage him into working with us to give investors a good deal. And we had a really good compromise. In the end, he managed to free up a whole bunch of other units, which he was going to give to KiwiBuild. So then he'd already accepted a major discount by selling to KiwiBuild. So he was willing to offer those to my investors at just a slightly above KiwiBuild price. So everyone got a cheaper property and was going to win.
And I think that's a really good example of when something goes wrong working with a developer in this instance, as long as you've kind of got that market power behind you, and in this instance you do because you've got 16 owners of units or purchases kind of in one block, if I can term it in these ways.
Probably not even that because, I mean, 15 individual contracts, if I was dealing with a developer and that was all I was going to ever do with them, they're probably less likely to do a deal than someone like this that might provide me with 200 investment opportunities that I assess a year, or 300 investment opportunities that I assess a year. Like, we help them with serious numbers of investments and we tweak things all the time and we help manage the projects with them to make sure that they're going to deliver a good investment product. So there's a bigger picture there.
And I think within that as well, though, is that when something crops up, how do you figure out a way where it's going to work for both people in this instance? Because if you're then able to come back and, okay, those properties aren't going to be given over to KiwiBuild now, but these investors potentially purchasing at much lower prices than they were otherwise going to spend.
Yeah. Another interesting one that I had last week is an investor actually contacted me and said, hey, what do you think of these properties? And on the surface, they looked awesome. And I was thinking, okay, well, these are good.
This was a developer.
No, the investor rang me and said, what do you think about these? Fired them on. And I know we spoke a few weeks ago about some of the rogue developers in the industry. Now, this particular developer, not necessarily a rogue, but not someone I would trust in a hurry. And so once I saw the company name, I thought, well, I'll look up here. And I looked up the company and then it took a wee while to track down this particular, I'm not going to name this person.
You've got to keep clicking
through
the company's office.
And sometimes you have to see what else they're associated with. See if you can track down on a piece of land that's also in that company name. Anyway, I managed to tie it to someone who I would not trust with my money. So I certainly wouldn't endorse for investors. Now, the product was very well priced. The person made it into a no from me. So I went back and said, hey, look, this is something that if you want to buy, the numbers work. If it were me recommending the developer, I would not hang my hat on this. Later on that week, just by sheer chance, and I guess this is one of the benefits of me hanging out with all the developers and being, you know, in the know with people, someone said to me, hey, have you heard about so-and-so? No. Oh, well, apparently he's selling these properties and they're too cheap. It's not going to work. And they're going to try and on-sell these contracts now. So he's not even doing the build. They're going to try and get someone else who will be a builder where they're probably going to be a far lesser product at the end. But of course, there's no builder actually stated at this stage. So they're using some freedoms in their contract to kind of pass it on, make a margin. So there's lots of people clipping the ticket along the way. And the investors that would invest in that kind of thing might end up with a far inferior product just because those contracts are obviously loose.
And just to talk around some of those details where that devil might be lurking. So you're saying this person is selling these properties too cheap. So investors are signing up because very, very
sounds
attractive
like a good
price. He's going to go find a builder who's perhaps not as clued up and is willing to take this project on. That builder's going to quickly lose money, and so they're going to have to make compromises. And is it things like, within most of these contracts, I believe there's 5% variance in terms of how big the properties are in terms of the floor plan?
It might be things like that, but also if you go to someone with a really good reputation, a Golden Homes, a Micro Home, someone like that, you probably pay a premium. There are other guys that will do things cheaper. And there are people that you probably don't want a house from at the end of the day, because if you're going to keep it for the long term, it's going to start to wear out. One of the developers that I know from around the traps and I would not endorse ever, one of my friends is living in one of their properties at the moment. And he said, holy hell, this property's only 3 years old. And, you know, the screws are starting to come loose on doors. The drawers aren't shutting properly. Things that you would expect from a house that's 30 or 40 or 50 years old, not a house that's 3 years old. I guess some of the other things that I'm seeing in the market now that make me really nervous is people being quick to sign up for a deal because there's a lack of stock. And that is absolutely true. There's a lack of stock across all of New Zealand at the moment. New builds are going for a premium because the government's tax changes make them far more attractive than an old property. As such, I think that there is a major risk, and we're going to see some real war stories over the next wee while, where people sign up for something where the contract is too loose, or there's too much wiggle room, or there's something like a sunset clause that doesn't protect them and it lets the developer cancel the contract. We're going to see a bit of this stuff. Mark my words, there'll be some great stories for the podcast. Give it 12 to 24 months. That's when you'll start to see some of these things kick in. I remember maybe about 8 years ago hearing about one Auckland property investment advisory company, and they'd signed up a whole lot of people through a developer, again, that just didn't have enough substance that I would have felt comfortable recommending them, but they did, and that's fine. Halfway through the construction phase, they ran out of money. Now, these were progressive payment builds. So people had paid a whole lot of money to the builder. Someone else had to come in and finish it, but there was massive delays. Now, I think there were about 30 builds that went on hold, and it was a real nightmare for those investors because you've got a half a mortgage at this stage, or two-thirds of a mortgage, and you haven't got any rent coming in to cover it. Unfortunately, I heard that that same investment group, who no longer exists, by the way, had the same thing happen 12 months later. And again, it was with a developer who, in my mind, didn't have, or I knew enough to know that they weren't as financially stable as I would have liked. And this is a really hard thing because you, as an individual investor, is unlikely to get that kind of information. It's not like you can ring up a development company and say, I'm thinking about investing through you. Would you mind just sending me your last 2 years' financials so I can have a look at the financial stability of your company? They will tell you to get lost. But these are the kind of things that you need to consider, because while it's all well and good to get a good deal on something, if there isn't enough margin and a developer goes broke halfway through, you will be left with a half-finished building if you don't have some protections in there. And probably the biggest thing that's going to drive this over the next wee while is the inflation around building materials. Again, one of my trusted developers rang me on Friday, last Friday, and said, hey, real issue for us. We've signed up 30 properties within this development. Some of them are your investors. The resource consent for the land and the building has not come through yet. Now, in that 6 months, the cost of one component, I think it was steel, no, timber or steel, has gone up 40%. So that's putting a major increase on his cost of construction. Basically, the build cost he's worked out is going to be $2 million more expensive in that 6 months. Sometimes there might only be $3 million worth of profit in a development. Sometimes there might only be $1 million worth of profit. So a $2 million deficit is really going to impact on the ability to deliver that product at budget. And so these are some of the things that you really need to be careful of, particularly as we enter this world of hot demand for developments.
Well, let me ask you this. In that scenario, Andrew, could the developer go to the investors and say, hey, look, we've had this increase in costs. We want to charge you more?
Yeah, they can, if they're still conditional from their end. So I think we're going to see a bit of that. Now, for that particular development, that was a conversation that we had last week. So I said, look, I don't want investors to lose out on the benefit of this property at a higher price. I think these are still a good investment. So if you can show me the legitimate increase and we can work out together that, okay, there's still $100,000 in this build when they finish, if they pay another $25,000 or $30,000, that's a better result than losing out on the whole thing and having the opportunity cost of having to go back to the market and find another property.
And just for everybody who's listening, just to really walk that through. So what we're suggesting here is these investors had these properties under contract for 6 months, whatever it happened to be. Over that time, the market would have shifted significantly. So they might have made $100,000
probably
worth
150,
of,
to be honest.
$150,000 worth of equity within these properties. And so going back and saying to them, hey, look, we need to increase the price by $25,000, although that sucks, and the investors surely, you know, you're not stoked about that. It is better to go back to the bank, get the extra $25,000, than lose out on the deal, go buy another property on the market, and pay that 150K extra anyway.
And actually, that's a really good point. One of my other ones from last week was a hard week, by the way. So one of the smaller developers and developments that we were working on was I think from memory, it was a 6-unit development or 5-unit development. Resource consent meant that they lost one of the units, which meant that rather than have 6, they now have 5. And so every unit in the development got more land. Developer came back and said, hey, look, originally, and I'm going to make up the numbers here, originally these things were 550, or maybe it was more like 575. Now they are going to be 625, and we've got a valuation of 800K of today's money. Now, just by the way, the 800K valuation doesn't meet the sniffed test to me. Like, that is not what the market would achieve in my professional opinion. But 625 sounds like a good deal. So one of the things that I've been doing over the weekend is working with the investors that are affected, running a new return on investment calculator. Hey, we've gone up $50,000, but there's probably not 800K versus 625. There's not 175K worth of value here, but there might be another 75K worth of value. I would probably still do that deal, so long as it still fits what you're looking for. Now, the investors can walk away from this deal, but just because there's been a price increase doesn't mean it's smart to walk away. Yes, it sucks, like you said before, which is pretty much exactly what I said, maybe with some more colourful language to the investors I was talking to. This is a real pain in the butt, but it is better to suck the salve a little bit if you're still going to get some good capital growth, you're still going to get a good investment, but it does still need to be a good investment. And again, I know I've harped on about this on Have You Missed the Boat Investing in Christchurch. Everything has to look at the numbers. Just because something is undervalued doesn't mean it's a good investment, but if the overall numbers work, then you should do it.
And two things just to add to that. There is a bit more risk with purchasing off the plans, and that's because there are some gains to be made because you're purchasing at a point where you're buying off paper where things tend to be relatively more affordable. The other thing that I would just recommend though is just because a developer asks for more money does not always mean that it's reasonable. Now, we've probably given you some examples here today where you think, okay, not the best thing, but look, you could probably move ahead with it because it's better than losing out on that specific deal. But there will be instances, and I'm sure we'll see them, Andrew, where developers will ask for more money over the next 12, 18, 24 months, and it won't be reasonable, and it won't make sense to accept it.
Sorry to cut you off there. That's probably more often than these situations. These are people that we've worked with that we know have legitimate reasons for that, and it's just a pain that we have to work through and make sure, yes, are people still protected? And again, work through and make sure it's still a good investment for that individual investor. But there will be lots of developers out there over the next wee while who have just underpriced projects and undersold projects and will look to recover it. There's some other people that we were working with recently who basically were just doing slippery things to try and get more money. They were trying to cancel contracts on people with not really good grounds. So anyway, luckily, because we have some strength and we've got a good legal team, we managed to protect those investors.
Fantastic. Let's wrap it up there. But please don't forget to rate, review and subscribe to the podcast. Really does help us get the message out to more people. And hey, make sure you tune in for tomorrow's episode. We are starting a brand new series called Back to Basics. We're going to have 4 episodes going through the details of the basics that you've got to know when investing with property. It's going to be great for anybody who's new listening to the show. It's going to be great for anybody who's listened to all 666 episodes and needs a refresher and wants the basics explained really, really well. So make sure you tune in tomorrow. We're going to get into that back to basics.
Back to basics.
Back to basics. Thanks for listening to the Property Academy podcast. I'm your host, Ed McKnight.
I'm Andrew Nicholl.
And we're going to be back again tomorrow with even more daily strategies, tactics and insights to help you get the most out of the New Zealand property market. Until next time.